sleekness in their sodden cloaks. "Lord Sparrowhawk, might you say a word to this wind, maybe?"
"How near are we to Roke?"
"Better than halfway, but we've made no headway at all this past hour, sir."
Ged spoke to the wind. It blew less hard, and for a while they went on fairly enough. And then sudden great gusts came whistling out of the south, and meeting these, they were driven back westward again. The clouds broke and boiled in the sky, and the ship's master roared out ragefully,
"This fool's gale blows always at once! Only a mage wind will get us through this weather, lord!"
Ged looked glum at that, but the ship and her men were in danger for him, so he raised up the mage wind into her sail. At once the ship began to cleave straight to the east, and the ship's master began to look cheerful again. But little by little, though Ged kept up the spell, the mage wind slackened, growing feebler, until the ship seemed to hang still on the waves for a minute, her sail drooping amid all the tumult of the rain and gale, and then with a thunder crack the boom came swinging round, and she jibed and jumped northward like a scared cat. Ged grabbed hold of a stanchion, for she lay almost over on her side, and shouted out, "Turn back to Sird, master!" The master cursed and shouted that he would not.
"A wizard aboard, and I the best seaman of the trade, and this the handiest ship I ever sailed! Turn back!"
Then the ship, turning again almost as if a whirlpool had caught her keel, he too grabbed hold of the stern post to keep aboard, and Ged said to him, "Leave me at Sird, and sail where you like. It's not against your ship this wind blows, but against me."
"Against you, a wizard of Roke? Have you never heard of the Roke wind, master?"
That keeps off evil powers from the Isle of the Wise. But what has that to do with you, a dragon tamer?"
"That is between me and my shadow," Ged answered shortly, as a wizard will,
and he said no more as they went swiftly with a steady wind and under clearing skies back over the sea to Sird. There was a heaviness and a dread in his heart as he went up from the wharves of Sird. The days were shortening into winter, and dusk came soon. With dusk, Ged's uneasiness always grew, and now the turning of each street seemed a threat to him, and he had to steel himself not to keep looking back over his shoulder at what might be coming behind him. He went to the Sea House of Sird, where travelers and merchants ate together of good fare provided by the township, and might sleep in the long raftered hall. Such is the hospitality of the thriving islands of the Inmost Sea. He saved a bit of meat from his dinner, and by the fire pit afterward he coaxed the Otak out of the fold of his hood where it had cowered all that day, and tried to get it to eat, petting it and whispering to it, "Oig, oig, 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 little one, silent one." But it would not eat, and crept into his pocket to hide. By that, by his own dull uncertainty, by the very look of the darkness in the corners of the great room, he knew that the shadow was not far from him. No one in this place knew him. They were travelers from other isles who had not heard the song of the Sparrowhawk, and none spoke to him. He chose a pallet at last and lay down, but all night long he lay with open eyes there in the raftered hall among the sleep of strangers, and all night he tried to choose his way, to plan where he should go and what he should do. But each choice, each plan was blocked by a foreboding of doom. Across each way he might go lay the shadow. Only Roke was clear of it, and to Roke he could not go, forbidden by the high and woven ancient spells that kept the perilous island safe. That the Roke wind had risen against him was proof. The thing that hunted him must be very close upon him now. That thing was bodiless, blind to sunlight, a creature of a lightless, placeless, timeless realm. It must grope after him through the days and across the seas of the sunlit world, and could take visible shape only in dream and darkness. It had as yet no substance or being that the light of the sun would shine on. And so it is sung in the deed of Hode. Daybreak makes all earth and sea, from shadow brings forth form, driving dream to the dark kingdom. But if once the shadow caught up with Ged, it could draw his power out of him, and take from him the very weight and warmth and life of his body, and the will that moved him. That was the doom he saw lying ahead on every road, and he knew that he might be tricked toward that doom, for the shadow, growing stronger always as it was nearer him, might even now have strength enough to put evil powers or evil men to its own use, showing him false portents or speaking with a stranger's voice, and for all he knew, in one of these men who slept in this corner or that of the raftered hall of the Sea House tonight, the dark thing lurked, finding a foothold in a dark soul, and there, waiting and watching Ged and feeding, even now, on his weakness, on his uncertainty, on his fear. It was past bearing. He must trust to chance and run wherever chance took him. At the first cold hint of dawn, he got up and went in haste, under the dimming stars, down to the wharves of Surd, resolved only to take the first ship outward bound that would have him. A galley was loading turby oil. She was to sail at sunrise, bound for Havnor Greatport. Ged asked passage of her master. A wizard's staff is passport, and payment on most ships. They took him aboard willingly, and within that hour the ship set forth. Ged's spirits lifted with the first lifting of the 40 long oars, and the drumbeat that kept the stroke made a brave music to him. And yet he did not know what he would do in Havnor, or where he would run from there. Northward was as good as any direction. He was a northerner himself. Maybe he would find some ship to take him on to Gaunt from Havnor, and he might see Ogion again. Or he might find some ship going far out into the reaches, so far the shadow would lose him and give up the hunt. Beyond such vague ideas as these, there was no plan in his head, and he saw no one course that he must follow. Only he must run. Those 40 oars carried the ship over 150 miles of wintry sea before sunset of the second day out from Surd. They came into port at Orimi on the east shore of the great land Husk, for these trade galleys of the inmost sea keep to the coasts and lie overnight in harbor whenever they can. Ged went ashore, for it was still daylight, and he roamed the steep streets of the port town, aimless and brooding. Orimi is an old town, built heavily of stone and brick, walled against the lawless lords of the interior of Husk Island. The warehouses on the docks are more like forts, and the merchants' houses are towered and fortified. Yet to Ged, wandering through the streets, those ponderous mansions seemed like veils, behind which lay an empty dark, and people who passed him, intent on their business, seemed not real men, but voiceless shadows of men. As the sun set, he came down to the wharves again, and even there, in the broad red light and wind of the day's end, sea and land alike to him seemed dim and silent. "Where are you bound, Lord Wizard?" So one hailed him suddenly from behind. Turning, he saw a man dressed in gray who carried a staff of heavy wood that was not a wizard's staff. The stranger's face was hidden by his hood from the red light, but